Welcome to the Company of Dads podcast, where we explore the sweet, silly, strange, and sublime aspects of being a lead dad in a world where men, who are the go-to parent, aren't always accepted at work, among their friends, or in the community for what they're doing. I'm your host, Paul Sullivan. Our podcast is just one of the many things we produce each week at the Company of Dads. We have various features, including the Lead Dad of the Week. We have our community, both online and in person. We have a new resource library for all fathers looking for answers to parenting questions. The one-stop shop for all of this is our newsletter, The Dad. So sign up today at thecompanyofdads.com/the dad. Today is our 100th episode, 100th episode of the Company of Dads podcast. And we decided to return to where we started by asking back our very first guest, Professor Kristen Shockley. She did some of the very first research, at least research that I saw, into how the pandemic lockdown began to change our roles at work, at home, in our communities, and with our families. I had reached out to her at the end of 2021 after reading a story in the New York Times, where I wrote for 13 years, that discussed her research on pandemic parenting. Her findings were eye-opening. If you want to hear them all, go back and listen to episode one. Today, she's a professor of management at Auburn University's Harbert School of Business. Welcome back, Kristen Shockley, to the Company of Dads podcast.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's hard to believe it's 100 episodes. Congrats.
I know. Thank you. So, you know, a lot has changed in the world. A lot has changed at the Company of Dads. We're going to get into that. But perhaps the biggest change from when we first talked is that you were at the University of Georgia, go Dogs, and now you're at one of its SEC rivals, Auburn. I mean, I married into the SEC. I know how these rivalries run deep. How did this come about?
Yeah, indeed. I went from the SEC East to the SEC West.
Maybe that's okay. You at least crossed that line. So
yeah. Although don't they say it's like one of the oldest rivalries? I don't know. It was when I was interviewing, I had to get in this mind space. Like, could I really come to this university that I've been taught from a young age to hate? But the answer was yes. You know, Auburn is a great place with a lot of resources. So I moved from a psychology department to the business school. So a little bit of a shift in my career, and just started in September. So far, everything's been great. Although I have to say, I still root for the Dogs.
Well, no, we'll keep that quiet. But I have to ask, like, you know, I wonder what they thought. Like, did you show up dressed all in like Georgia red and they were all in like Auburn orange and you kind of sat across from each other? Like,
yeah. So it's pretty funny this year, you know, Georgia played Auburn at Auburn. So I went to the game, but I'm thinking, okay, I can't show up to like my department's tailgate wearing Georgia gear because that's just rude, but I can't like bring myself to wear Auburn gear, so my mom can sew. So I had her make me a split shirt. It was half Auburn, half Georgia, so it said Aubrey-ja or something like that.
That's awesome. We got to get a photo of that. That is absolutely awesome.
I'll send you one.
So, you know, when we first spoke, there was one part of your research back then that really stuck out to me, and that was that when men and women were first, you know, both stuck, you know, working at home during the lockdown part of the pandemic, women still did the bulk of the household work. Even though they were both working, they both had responsibilities. Kids were in the house. And not surprisingly, no shock here, this caused a lot of resentment since there was really nowhere to hide. You didn't have an excuse. You're like, oh, I have to run out now. Like, no, everyone is in the house. And that was, you know, you would have thought that, you know, self-preservation, human nature, you might have adapted a bit more quickly. In your research, you know, you're a work-life scholar. In your research, has that dynamic changed? Is it changing, you know, in certain groups above other groups? Has there been any shift as to how, you know, the work and home part of life gets divided up among married working parents?
So I can't say that I have like personally collected specific data to speak to this. I did a lot of research at the start of the pandemic and then had a baby and slowed down a little bit. So I haven't collected much new data on that specific question, but I can tell you kind of what I'm hearing from other stuff I've seen is that I think that initial part, you know, we collected that data like 2 weeks into the pandemic.
It's remarkable.
So
yeah,
it was like so new. I think that as time progressed, men did start to pick up a little bit more of the slack because you can only do it all for so long, right? That's not really a sustainable situation. And I think what I'm seeing now from more of like a lasting long impact is more just about the permanency of remote work. Yeah, many more people, I mean, obviously more people are back to work than they were at the start of the pandemic, but so many more people are now in remote work arrangements that are more permanent, or at least hybrid arrangements. And so there's more of a permanent mindset in thinking about how this affects the dynamics of couples at home. And I think one of the big benefits of remote work is the additional freedom it gives you to do tasks at home. And so I do think we're seeing men pick up a little bit more of that because by virtue of just this is more permanent and they're now more likely to work remotely.
You know, it's such an amazing shift, a tectonic shift that we could have never imagined in 2019. Was there a moment in the past 3.5 years where that, you know, remote work, that hybrid option moved into, you know, sort of permanency, as you say? Like, what was it, the second wave of the pandemic? Or what was it that made people say, this is what I want, and companies acquiesce?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really, and you're right, it's such an interesting, it's like this natural experiment that happened. And we just so rarely have things like this. I mean, fortunately, because, you know, there was a lot of bad things out of the pandemic. Yeah. But I think it took something like this to force companies to have to engage in remote work. And then I think the hybrid now is coming out of people saying, I mean, many people just refused to go back. They just said, like, no, I did this for 2 years. I can do this job remotely. Why do I need to come back all the time, full time? And it's kind of hard to argue with that. And plenty of companies were saying, hey, we'll use this as a recruitment piece if other companies aren't going to do it. And then I think the hybrid piece of it comes in because, you know, full remote can be pretty tough from a like sense of connection at work, just social isolation. So I think the best of both worlds is really kind of going in 1 or 2 days a week. So you get that connection piece, but then you have the time at home where the research suggests you actually get more done. You're more focused on work, but you also have a little bit of freedom to do some of those home tasks that always need to be done.
Yeah. If we make the assumption that, you know, a good portion of the workforce, 20s, 30s, 40s, good portion of the managers, you start to become a manager, you need some experience first, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. When you see, you know, what are, you know, the positive parts of this for managers, remote work, hybrid work, and what are the challenging parts for managers where they've really started to push back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is an interesting question. And shockingly, there's really not a ton of research on this because every time I talk to people that are, you know, not academics, this is like one of the big questions they have is like, how do we manage people remotely? And I'm like, I do have some data on this. We're working on a study right now to try to speak to it, but there's shockingly little like evidence-based stuff out there. But I think what I can say in terms of the benefits, I think the big one is what I just said, the recruitment and the retention of people, and particularly adding diversity to your workforce, both in terms of gender diversity, racial diversity. I've seen a lot of discussion of people that are not in the majority group saying they can feel more comfortable when they're able to work from home, like they can be more of their authentic self without having to go into work every day, and people with disabilities. So I think that's a real benefit, is just opening up your talent pool. The challenges, though, are I think the big sense that sense of connection, the sense of belongingness. So to me, this is like the billion-dollar question: is how can you have a remote workforce and still have people feel that same commitment, that same connection at work? The stuff that we tried during the pandemic, like let's have a virtual happy hour, you know, let's have these virtual events, like they just don't work.
No more drinking on Zoom. No more drinking on Zoom.
Yeah. Like that, people were like, oh, this is cool for about 3 weeks. And then, you know, it felt forced. Some companies try things. There's this app on Slack called Donut. I'm sure if you're familiar with that, but it pairs people randomly in the company up. And so you'll have like Thursday afternoons reserved for 30 minutes for your donut meeting. And so that's like a way that's trying to force like the run-ins in the hall. You won't see people in the hall, but you have these now scheduled random meetups. But you know, some people love those, some people hate those. I think it really depends on your personality, so it's like that's not the answer. And I'm doing some research trying to figure out what are the kinds of things that actually work that can facilitate this connection. But as a manager, you know, I think that's a really tough thing to struggle with. We know that affects retention. So on the one hand, you can keep people in because you're offering flexibility, but on the other hand, if people don't feel any connection to their workplace, it's easy for them to say, I'm going to go check out the next company.
I wonder, though, you know, not to get all Shakespearean here, but doth managers protest too much? I mean, if we think about giant companies, and you know, I worked at the New York Times, I was, you know, largely, you know, 3 days a week, I'd be at home, a day or two, I go into the office. It's an enormous company with headquarters in New York City, but it has, you know, bureaus in Atlanta, in Chicago, in Dallas, and, you know, Los Angeles. And like most companies, you know, who have many more people, if you were a KPMG or a Morgan Stanley, you have enormous offices around the country. And even within the building itself, you have, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people, you know, working there. And it's not like everybody knows everybody else. You know the people in your group. And so this is where managers are now saying, like, how do we create, you know, unity, bonding, cohesion, where nobody really worried about that before. And they just say, hey, it's the monthly, you know, happy hour. Let's go out and have, you know, fried cheese and beer. You know, when we really kind of step back and look at it, is, you know, in particular in large companies, is the remote work that, or hybrid work at the very least, not fully remote, hybrid work, really that much more different when it comes to getting to know your colleagues and bonding?
Yeah. I mean, I think when it's, you know, there's kind of two different animals. The fully remote, I do think it is, because, you know, as much as we want to think Zoom can emulate face-to-face, it just doesn't, you know, it's just not the same. And you are missing those little informal interactions. Again, I just don't think you can emulate that. Hybrid, you know, does, I think, kind of have the best of both worlds, because you are in person sometimes. But the problem is that unless you make it so people have to come in on a certain day, you might go in, and a lot of people say this, like, why am I going back to work? I'm the only one that's in on Tuesdays. So this is just completely pointless. So I think there's some coordination about the days when people are in office and thinking strategically. The in-office tasks should really be things like brainstorming, or, you know, types of tasks that people are doing that need, that benefit from face-to-face. And so you have to be really thoughtful. In an ideal hybrid world, you're very thoughtful in the scheduling and planning of what's done when people are face-to-face and trying to have their days overlap. But, you know, bigger you get, that gets way more complicated and takes away some freedom too, if you say you have to be in on Tuesdays and Wednesdays or whatever.
So what you're saying is you and I shouldn't go into the same office, sit next to each other at desk, and Zoom with our colleague who's on the third floor. That's not a good use of our time.
Yeah, probably not.
You know, but some of the companies that I've talked to that have had the most success have some version of what you just sort of alluded to, and that's an anchor day. They say, like, okay, if you're in this division, you'll come in on Thursdays. And they've also sort of said, hey, you know, when you come in on Thursdays, just as you said, you're not going to be on Zoom meetings all day long. You're going to do, you know, other work. Is there any argument against a system like that for not just working parents, but for caregivers in general and just humans in general?
I haven't seen any arguments against it, minus just that it's, like I said, removing some of that benefit of flexibility. You know, it removes some of the choice. But if we're comparing it to, you have to be in on Thursdays versus you have to be in on every day.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, come on, you know.
A lot better. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing that I've read that really talks about. I think maybe one thing is people are probably going to get a little bit less work, like task-oriented work, done on those days, because they're going to spend some of the time socializing. But that's sort of part of it, right? You're building that in. You're recognizing that the socializing is an important aspect of work too.
Yeah, you know, we read a lot about, we hear a lot about the companies that are at the extremes. You have sort of on one end, you know, Allstate, the insurance company, has gone, you know, pretty much all, not all remote, but hugely remote, sort of, you know, went from like sort of 20% remote to 80% remote, and the CEO is really making it work. Talked to another healthcare company called Virgin Pulse. The CEO there, as like you said, sees the benefit of being able to hire people all around the country, not just in Rhode Island where they're based, and he's all in for it. But then on the other extreme, you have some of the financial services firms like JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs, who have kind of drawn a line in the sand saying, if you're everyone in 5 days a week, if you're above a certain, you know, level, 5 days a week, that's the noise. What is the vast middle? Has the vast middle of companies, have they figured it out, or are they just sort of muddling through a little bit more quietly as they make sense of remote work?
Yeah, my sense is the latter, is they're just still really trying to figure it out. I mean, I've seen kind of like within this muddling, two different strategies. One is that we tried to get everyone to come back and there was just a huge revolt against it. So we were like, okay, never mind. We've got to give some flexibility. And now we have to figure out what that's going to look like. And the other end has been more of right from the get-go understanding, like, okay, we're going to allow some flexibility, but they're trying to figure out what that looks like. And like I said, are they going to do something where they have the anchor day? Or are they going to just say you have to be in X number of days? Are they not going to have any limits? And some of this is trial and error, I think.
When we talked the first time, one of your findings from that very early research was that, you know, the companies the individuals who did the best, couples who did the best, were some version of, you know, one parent kind of being the lead parent doing, a lot of work, but then having the other parent really being there to pick up and do key things when that lead parent had to be on a call or needed a break. And that was, from your research, as I remember, you know, the most successful option. And what always stood out to me in that research was the least successful option was, you know, one parent, often the father, just worked all the time and ignored things that were going on at home. And he wasn't really anymore productive at work, which is great because it means that he wasn't a sociopath and he couldn't completely tune out his family and loved ones. But when you see in this sort of hybrid, you know, world, potentially hybrid world, are, you know, some of the advantages that, you know, a married couple, you know, they can, you know, trade off the days that they are in the office and at home. So maybe you only have to pay for childcare one or 2 days a week. Or what are some of the advantages when, you know, they kind of play, you know, we all look at our calendars mm-hmm. and play sort of calendar Jenga, but what are the yeah. advantages of the way we've moved for, you know, the home life for working parents?
Yeah. I mean, I would caution against saying kind of using it as full-time childcare just because, you know, as many of us do during the pandemic, it's pretty hard to get anything done when you're watching
kids. You're absolutely right. Like if your kids aren't in school, if they're not of a school age and there's not an after-school program for it, it's not going to work.
Pretty bad. But I think it has a lot of benefits from emergency situations with childcare. So what I mean by that, like if a kid is sick, oftentimes we have the default parent is the one that always stays home or figures it out what they're going to do. But now when you have more flexibility with the hybrid days, and if you're alternating them, then I think it's a lot easier to say, okay, it's not me as the mom or the dad who's the default parent that's doing it. It's whoever's working from home today. Right. And so I think in that sense, it's allowing for a little bit more of an even playing field and helping to break up some of these gender roles. Absolutely. And it's also, and again, I'm not saying that when people are working from home, they're spending a huge chunk of their time doing household tasks. But, you know, we walk downstairs to take a 10-minute break. We're going to switch out the laundry. Again, just by if you're able to have the hybrid and you're alternating it, I think it's naturally going to allow for these chores to be more evenly split amongst the people in the household.
Yeah. You know, when we talked the first time, your second child had just been born, you were working remotely, it was a crazy time. But I remember you saying that your husband worked in technology. When I think about, you know, dual, you know, income couples and how they can move and how they have flexibility, do you think, you know, the pandemic and the shifts that have happened in the world of work made it easier for you as a professor to move from Georgia to Auburn, knowing that, you know, your husband wouldn't have to necessarily quit his job, that he could, you know, keep doing it the way he was doing it? Did that help in the sort of conversations within your family around kind of minimizing the disruption?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, he actually was working remotely before the pandemic. He was kind of in a unique situation where we both lived in New York, and then I got the job at the University of Georgia and moved down. And then we got married. So he was interviewing for jobs at that time because he had decided to leave his company. And he kind of got to the very end of the interview process and then said, oh, by the way, my wife lives in Georgia. I need to work remote, which is a pretty bold thing to do. At that point, he works for a startup. They were pretty bought into him. And so he had that leverage. And then I remember we would think a lot about, wow, like, not to say his job wasn't going well, but if it wasn't, he kind of felt stuck in it because it was so rare to have he's the CTO, a high position that's remote at that time. And then the pandemic came and it was like, oh man, this opens up there's a lot more jobs now that could be remote. So I think in some ways it kind of put the power, he's still with that company, but it kind of put the power more in his hands for feeling like he had more options. And then, yes, definitely for me, the dual career consideration is a huge issue for academics, especially when you're moving to these college towns. Like, I mean, Auburn, Alabama is not like the hub for technology. So, you know, being able to know that he could still work. It was a non-factor. It gives us a lot more opportunity with having the two kind of careers that we have, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. That's been wonderful. Once again, last question, big question, you know, a lot of changes in the past 3.5 years that few people could have imagined. Where are you as a professor doing research in school management? Where do you see, you know, work life and the balance and the shuffle? Where do you see that going in the future? If we, you know, at the 200th episode, we come back and talk again in, you know, two more years or 5 years, where do you see things shaking out between, you know, companies and workers and you know, parents and caregivers?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I could answer it in a couple different ways. You know, obviously, I think the hybrid work is here to stay. So we're going to just continue to see people embracing that and really trying to understand how to make it work. I do think one thing the pandemic did was forced companies to actually recognize that employees are people, are parents, they have lives. And that, not that the pandemic showed this because that was a really stressful time, but I think when you look at other research, when people are fulfilled in all parts of their lives, they're better employees, they're better able to focus at work. And so I think, and maybe this is wishful thinking, but my general sense is that organizations are starting a little bit to recognize that you have to let people have a life to have them be good employees and to keep the best workforce. And so I hope we continue to see well-being initiatives from the employer standpoint that go beyond just sort of like lip service to it, that are actually real things that help people make their lives manageable. And the recognition that, I mean, what's just crazy when you take a step back is the way that work is still structured in our society is largely based on having somebody at home full time, you know, and that is just not the reality for most people. And I think the pandemic made companies face that and see, wow, you know, most people have a lot going on. I mean, they actually physically saw it, like with people with kids running around.
Yeah, running in the background.
During Zoom calls. So I would say kind of that. And then the other thing from more of a family side of things that I'm seeing a lot of focus on that I think is really important is what's this concept known as mental load. Are you familiar with that, right? The idea that, you know, we think about division of labor and all the tasks need to be done, but there's all these things, the behind the scenes, the planning and the, you know, just tracking stuff in the household, and that really disproportionately falls on women. So thinking more about how can we make everyone more aware of that and help divide those tasks up more, because they really do take a toll when you're taking on that big part of the family labor. And just until the past few years, that hadn't really been talked about at all. So that's something I'm personally really excited about, because I think that's really relevant and under focused on.
Excellent. Kristen Shockley, guest one, now guest 100. Thank you for joining me again on the Company of Dads podcast.
Thank you, Paul. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Company of Dads podcast. I really appreciate you tuning in week after week. I just want to use this moment here to thank the people who make it possible. Number one, of course, Helder Mira, who is our podcast editor. We also have Skip Cherryholmes, who many of you know from the Lead Dad Diaries. He's taken over our social media. Terry Brennan is helping us with our audience development, and Emily Servant is there each and every day helping with the web development. I can't do any of this without an amazing board of advisors. So I just want to say thank you to all of you who help, and I want to say thank you to everyone who listens, and hopefully you'll tune in again next week. Thanks so much.